Hello, baseball fans, and welcome back to episode number 16 of the Roster Rhetorical, the official MLB Daily Dish podcast. As always, I'm your host, Chris Schubert, and with me are my two wonderful co-hosts, Mike Bates and Matt Goldman. Guys, how are we doing?
Not so bad.
Pretty solid.
Yeah, well, we had a big plan for the show. We worked on it all day, and then Justin Upton came along, decided to sign with the Tigers.
Yeah, he kind of blew that to hell, didn't he?
And now we had to rearrange our show for this evening. So, now we have something to talk about, though, Mike.
Yeah, pretty excited.
Actual news. So, guys, where should we start with this? I mean, he signs a six-year, $132.75 million deal, and the opt-out is after the 2017 season? Is that right?
That's right.
Correct.
Okay, and that... Okay, so I think we've done this before on the show a number of times, but that puts him in that 2018 class, right?
No.
It doesn't?
That's the year before.
Okay, because I was...
The big free agent class is between 2018 and 2019. This puts him in a class of Carl Crawford, Jason Wirth, Carlos Gonzalez, his brother, funnily enough, Matt Holliday, Curtis Granderson, Melky Cabrera, goes on and on, Jay Bruce.
But he's going to be the class outfielder of that guy. Class.
Right,
yeah.
So he's the guy there. Okay. This kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, we were kind of all talking about Cespedes. I know it's only Monday as the day we're recording this, with him potentially going to the Astros and some other teams joining the mix. But out of nowhere here on Monday night, big splash, Upton goes to the Tigers. So what were your guys' thoughts?
Well, I know, I want to say it was on this podcast, because I don't really jump around to too many other podcasts, that we talked about how we were just waiting for Mike Ilitch to authorize a huge bump in spending, because their outfield situation was pretty terrible up until an hour ago. They had Anthony Gost starting in left, Cameron Maben starting in center, and you know the newfound slugger J.D. Martinez in right. So Martinez looked good out there, but trying to make the playoffs with a starting outfield of Anthony Gost and Cameron Maben making up two-thirds of your group was not ideal. So while it's a huge commitment, and the Tigers now have a fair amount of money committed for the next 3-4 years, or you know, depending on when, if Upton opts out, you know, they really needed to do something. And if a trade wasn't going to happen, I just couldn't see a way where they didn't go out and get one of the three big name guys that were left out there.
Mike, I have a question for you.
Okay, I'm right here.
The Tigers had a pretty good offseason before this Justin Upton signing. They got Jordan Zimmermann. They brought in Mike Pelfrey, Mark Lowe, Mike Avilas. They traded for Maben, who's in that outfield. They got K-Rod and Justin Wilson. But it kind of felt like they weren't...
Mark Lowe.
And I said Mark Lowe.
Did you say Mark Lowe?
I didn't hear
you say Mark Lowe.
I did. But it seemed like they weren't involved in any of these other talks. We kind of forgot about the big offseason that they had, and then they jump back in here with Upton. And when you look at this list of what they got, they've really improved this team for next year.
Well, I mean, I think a couple of things to remember. One, they lost 87 games last year, which isn't good, but it's not awful. And they did that in part because they were really hit hard by injuries. Miguel Cabrera only played 119 games. Jose Iglesias only played 120. They traded Yoenis Cespedes in midseason when they were out of it. Victor Martinez was out. They traded David Price midway through the season and Joaquin Soria. Anibal Sanchez was hurt during the year. Justin Verlander was hurt during the year. You know, the list goes on, and the bullpen was awful. So this was a bad and injured Tigers team. With some additional luck on the health front, and actually, as I was looking over their roster, they don't have... they're not as old as we think they are. They've done a very good job of getting younger in the various hitter spots in their lineup. Their pitching is still not terribly old. And they've really done a good job of revamping this bullpen. So I could see the Tigers being a pretty big improvement, putting themselves in line for definitely one of the wild card spots with this and their other acquisitions.
So the interesting thing for me out of this is that the Tigers got creative here. Their first round pick, the number 9 overall, I believe, pick was protected because they're in that top 10. it allowed them to then go out and sign guys that had this qualifying offer attached to them, with only losing a second round pick, and then if they signed somebody else, a third round pick. They lost a second round pick for Jordan Zimmerman, and now they've lost a third round pick for Justin Upton. And when you put that into the context, to sign Jordan Zimmerman and Justin Upton, you would give up a second or third round pick for those guys. So having that first round pick protected, I think, helped this along. And I think also already having Jordan Zimmerman signed and only having to give up a third round pick sort of made it easier for them to make this deal and give up a third round pick compared to teams who probably have to have given up a first round pick in order to sign him.
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, we were talking before this about Mike Ilitch being the owner of the Tigers and his, you know, obsession with finally winning a World Series. And, you know, regardless of whether it was a first-round pick or a third-round pick in this case, you know, you just had the feeling that the Tigers weren't done and that he wasn't going to let them go into the season feeling short-staffed. You know, I don't think the Tigers have a very good pitching staff still. We're talking about, let's see, Verlander, who's sort of a question mark.
Zimmerman.
Anibal Sanchez, again, we don't know exactly how healthy he's going to be. Daniel Norris, coming off of cancer treatment. And good God, Mike Pelfrey is going to be in a starting rotation again. So,
oh boy.
You know, this is a team that does have weaknesses, but it's a team that really could slug its way into contention.
And Matt, I think it was you that said this on Twitter before the show, that Mike Ilitch has really set up this team to be win now, and whoever takes over this team later on could be in some trouble.
Yeah, you know, obviously if Upton takes the opt out,
he's going to take the opt out
after 2017.
Well, he has to play.
I mean, unless he gets hurt.
Well, he has to play.
Right.
Well.
But you know, I guess that brings up another point. We mentioned the 2018-2019 class that is going to be coming up. That's got guys like Harvey, David Price, maybe
Strasburg.
Or, well, let's say he will probably Harper,
Kershaw,
Lisk, Fernandez. Maybe I can't.
There's so
can't
many names I forget.
Kershaw, but. Right, which is the problem. I think a lot of teams are going to hold off on spending in 2017 if they can afford to because of how many players are going to be available in 2018. So while my gut says that Upton will take the opt-out clause, you know, assuming he's healthy over the next 2 years and he performs as, you know, we've come to expect, part of me wonders if maybe he and his agent might decide to just, you know, keep the remainder of the $123 million or $132 million deal that he just signed. We saw it happen this year, how many guys are still left, how long it took some guys to sign, and the 2018-2019 class is just going to be monstrous. But having said that, the Tigers just have so much money committed to a small group of players. Zimmerman signed for a considerable future. Miguel Cabrera is going to be earning $30 million a year pretty soon. Justin Verlander, I believe, gets up to $28 million. For the rest of his contract, which I'm looking at right now, yeah, $28 million through 2019. Victor Martinez is getting $18 million a year for the next three seasons. Jordan Zimmerman's eventually going to be taking in $24 million. Anibal Sanchez gets $16.8 million for the next 2 years. So, if you know, I mean, Ilitch is old, and I don't want to get too morbid, but you know, if he died tomorrow, I don't think any of us would be shocked. It would be awful, obviously. But he, you know, he's the clock is ticking. You know, he really wants to win a World Series now, so he's thinking about now, just spending as much money as he can. And obviously, someone else is going to have to take over this franchise, and they've just got an exorbitant amount of money committed to. I mean, let's see, by 2019, if Upton is still there, they'll have roughly $100 million committed to four players, probably a little more. Actually, yeah, it'll be more than $100 million. So it's not a franchise killing situation that they've got there, but they're definitely going to have to get creative and hope that guys like Daniel Norris and Michael Fulmer develop into, you know, the frontline guys that they're hoping for them to be, because then they can have some cost controlled solutions and, you know, dip into the free agent market if they decide that they need to.
Well, I agree with you, Matt, that that Justin Upton probably should opt out after 2017 if he has two good years. But having the opt-out gives him the flexibility to determine how many other teams are going to be in the outfield market that particular year. This year, we haven't seen a ton of teams, you know, go after outfielders. You know, we see what's happened with Yoenis Cespedes, and Upton's market really wasn't that much defined until he's out of the blue signed with the Tigers. So maybe before he decides to opt out, him and his agents are going to take a look and say, this is how many teams are going to need an outfielder. You know, this is what we think we are going to be able to do with these teams, and then he'll go from there. But it gives him the flexibility, and we talk about that so much on this show with so many players getting opt-outs. It's the flexibility that he has. Because if he doesn't think he can get, what would it be, 4 years, I got to do quick math, like $90 million? If he doesn't think he can get more than that in the free agent pool in after the 2017 season, then he's better off just taking the deal. But if he thinks that he can get one of those teams to get into a bidding war, then it's going to be worth it for him.
But this is going to happen. I mean, again, we're talking 2 years out. Salaries are going to continue to rise. And when he comes out in 2 years onto that free agent market, he's going to be the best outfielder on the market just because this is not a really good-looking free agent class. He's going to opt out, guys.
You're convinced? I'm surprised.
Unless he gets hurt, absolutely he's going to opt out. And you know what? The Tigers are probably going to be glad that he does.
Let me paint this picture for you. What if he hits 230 in 2017?
Well, yeah, okay. That could...
Well, I would also hope that by 2017, front offices aren't really paying that much attention to batting.
Yeah, but okay, well, sure, but okay. So he tanks, right?
And he could be good in the first year, but if he has a bad 2017 season, that's what he's going into free agency with.
Justin Upton has been worth at least 2.5 wins for the last 5 seasons.
He'd also be on the other side of 30.
He's only going to be 28. I do not see.
He's 28 right now.
He's going to be 28 right now, and then so he'll be 30. He's not going to fall off the table between now and 2 years from now. He's just not.
But you think
barring injury, Justin Upton is going to opt out and is going to be the most sought after outfielder on the market in 2 years.
I just have a hard time believing that a team is going to give a guy that's crossing over the wrong side of 30.
Then you're not paying attention to the offseason that's going on.
But
right
look
now,
at what's
Chris.
Happening with. I give you a perfect example. Look what's happened with Cespedes. This is a guy that's 30 years old and can't get.
Cespedes is going to get paid. He's the last man standing, unless teams.
I don't think
really
he's going to get more than 4 years.
About
90
Dexter
million.
Fowler. You don't think he's going to get more than 4 years?
No, he'll get four years. I don't think he'll get more than 4 years, $90 million, which is what Upton would be leaving on the table and would have to beat in order to make the opt out worth it.
Yeah, but we're talking 2 years down the line. We're talking about salaries continuing to grow. Cespedes is going to make at least 4 years and $70 million, $75 million. In 2 years, Upton will opt out and will beat that with no difficulty.
All right. I disagree, but I'm glad we have a disagreement on the show. One of the first times in a while that we've argued. But we mentioned him, so let's talk about him. As this Upton signing affects Yoenis Cespedes and his potential market. Now, Mike, you don't think his market is that narrow or that dwindled down because of this Upton news?
Well, again, he's the last man standing at the moment, unless teams are really going to go in on Dexter Fowler. And we're talking about – I think there are suitors left. I think the Angels are a realistic possibility. God knows their left field situation looks awful. The Indians may need outfield help after, given that Michael Brantley is going to be sidelined for part of the season, and they look unsettled in right field. The Mets need help as well, and the White Sox are a team that has shown a lot of willingness to spend to get a guy, and the Orioles have also been interested in Cespedes on potentially a short-term deal. So I would not be, you know, I don't think Cespedes is going to have trouble finding a contract that pays him something close to the going rate.
So he wanted 6 years with an AAV of $22 million. That was when he was talking to the Orioles.
And that's not realistic.
That's not going to happen.
Right.
So what I think he's doing right now, and this you can call this bias or looking at it through Mets colored shades, and that's fine. But he enjoyed his time in New York. He liked being there. He wanted to come back. That's why he negotiated to take that clause out of his contract where the Mets only had the first 5 days after the World Series to talk to him. He wanted the Mets to be involved in contract talks. I think he would be willing to take a shorter deal with the Mets if he can't get the money that he wants from another team. And I don't see the Indians poning up that money. I don't see the Indians?
You did.
I don't see the White Sox poning up that money. And I don't see the Angels doing it. So he may try to get something in the realm of $100 million for 5 years. But I think what he's going to end up doing, and I'm going to make this prediction on the show, so we have it on the interwebs. 4 years, $90 million with the Mets with an opt-out after the first year. Boom.
I don't know if an opt-out is really necessary to get Cespedes to sign a contract. I guess it could be interesting, and there's no point in not offering one if that gets the deal done, but he's already 30.
But if he has another killer year like he did this year, which is not, I don't think it's possible, but let's say he does, then he would be the only guy next year and could make a killing.
Maybe, but I mean, then, you know, teams have been worried to give him 6 years because he's already 30. If he's 31, even coming off of a great year, you got to wonder how many years of his prime are still ahead of him.
Well, there's no,
and especially given his 2013 and 2014 seasons, where he was pretty much just, you know, he was better than average, but he wasn't this otherworldly slugger. You know, I mean, I guess Scott Kazmir got the opt out after 1 year. But I don't see Cespedes really demanding an opt out. But you know, this has been the off season of opt out, so I can't say I would be really caught off guard if he did get.
And him. I don't think it has to. I don't think that's what he's demanding. But it's only beneficial for him to take it. There's no benefit for the Mets to offer it, because if he leaves, then they have to fill this position next year. But what it does is it's maybe more enticing to him if he does have a good year and wasn't really enthralled with all the contracts he got this year. He can test the market again in a free agent class where he's the only guy and could probably beat the money that he would have gotten if he stayed with the Mets for 3 years. That's all I'm saying. It would only be a sweetener for him to potentially make more money if he has another big year.
And see, I'm just thinking it's cute that you think that the Mets are going to spend money.
Yeah, I know. It's a pipe dream. And the only reason why I think they're going to sign him is because everything seems to be falling into place for a team where that doesn't happen. I can't tell you how many times I thought they were going to do something and the pieces just didn't fall right, or they didn't do it and it didn't happen. This just feels like it's going to the point where the Mets are his best option and he wants to play there and he's going to come back. Now, I'm a Mets fan, so I'm used to having my heart broken, and I'm more than likely going to see him in like a White Sox jersey next year.
I think Cleveland makes a lot of sense. Obviously, we don't really know what their financial situation is and if they've got the flexibility to do that, but right now they've got a starting outfield of Rajay Davis, Lonnie Chisenhall, and Abraham Almonte, at least according to their depth chart. And for a team that's got a rotation of Kluber, Carrasco, Salazar, Anderson, and maybe Bauer, that they deserve you know, a guy that can hit a few balls over the fence and drive in some runs, and we don't know how long Brantley's going to be out. Shoulder surgeries are always kind of scary to hear in baseball. So at least of the teams that still need an outfielder, I think Cleveland makes the most sense. But like we said, kind of hard to see them pulling out the 25 or, you know, $18 to $20 million a year it might take to get him.
We didn't even talk about the Astros with Cespedes.
I was going to get there, but I think today kind of put that to rest, the fact that they're probably not going to commit that much money to him. There were a number of articles, and I think, Matt, did you write a piece today about that?
Yeah, Peter Gammons was told by three executives to watch out for the Astros in the Cespedes market.
So, and then I think I had there was a Houston Chronicle, I think, I don't know where it was from, but there was a column that was written, or a piece that was written, that said that the Houston ownership would probably not approve that much money being, as I dropped my phone on the floor, would not approve that much money being handed over. So I think your pipe dream, Mike, is not going to happen.
Just as I look at Twitter while we still do the show, just so we don't miss anything, John Heyman, and this could serve as a really nice segue if you want, Chris.
Oh, sure, go ahead. I love segues.
Mike Ilitch was absolutely ready to sign Chris Davis before GM Al Avila talked him out of it.
Oh, thank God for Al Avila.
Right?
If you're a Tigers fan.
Mike, did you take notes on how to do a proper segue?
I've been doing segues in this show professionally for weeks now. I'm happy to let Matt take over some of the burden.
Well, he did.
He did a fine job.
That was a perfect segue to the actual topic we wanted to talk about, which is that Chris Davis is returning or has returned to the Baltimore Orioles. And I don't have the article in front of me, so how much money was it? Because I don't have it off the top of my head.
161, but...
It's deferred forever.
If you defer the money and you do the present value calculations, it comes out to about $126 million.
That's pretty amazing.
It's literally deferred forever. It's the only way to describe it.
2037, I believe, is the last year that they will be... I know he'll be 51 years old when he gets his last payment from the Orioles.
So that's how many years from now? That's 21 years from now. I will be 42 when that happens.
And I'll probably be dead.
I'm 21. No, Mike, we got to have you on the show for when he gets his last payment.
Oh, well.
This show's going to go on forever, Mike. I don't know what you expect here.
Dig me up and prop me up and put you in a
chair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Weekend at Bernie's me for the podcast.
Right. Ross Rhetorical Weekend at Bernie's edition.
All right. That's a really low price. I just can't get over how Davis is a one-dimensional player, and he's or two dimensions. He walks and he hits home runs.
He doesn't even walk that much for a guy with as much power.
No, it's true. He's to get him to stay where he's been successful and comfortable. That's a very low feeling contract. Even for somebody who's going to be 30 and who led the league in strikeouts last year with 208. He's likely to be a good hitter for at least another 3 years. So,
I wonder, and I know that they've said that they're still interested in Cespedes, but I wonder how much their reported offer to Cespedes was a power play.
I'm sure it was because it leaked,
right? And because of how quickly it happened, this whole Davis thing coming back and signing, it happened within a day or two of that story getting leaked. And those things don't get out unless people want them to get out. I don't know. I am not a fan of deferring money as a person who's a fan of a team that has done it.
Well, you know, it works out better for the team than it does the player.
Right.
Because it winds up being less actual money for the franchise than they would. If the Mets had paid Bonilla, if we're going to use that example... I can't remember how long that contract was.
Still going.
The actual playing contract. But people always bring that up when Bonilla's getting his $1 million check or whatever. And while it's really nice to guarantee yourself a paycheck, decades after you're done playing, it makes financial sense from the standpoint of the team. You can say it from the player standpoint too. It's kind of like a built-in guarantee if you lose all your money in a Ponzi scheme or something so that you're not homeless and broke. So I can see the benefits from the player point of view, but for the Orioles, this makes a lot of sense, even though they're going to have Chris Davis on their books until 2037.
Well, it's $3.5 million after he retires, right? $3.5 million every year.
I believe it's $3.5 million for something like the first 5 years after the contract runs out, and then it goes down to $1.5 million for the remainder.
Now, this all depends on the finances of the team. If the team's doing well and they're bringing in money and they have the flexibility to just go out and spend, then this $1.5 million doesn't matter. The $3.5 million doesn't matter.
$3.5 million doesn't matter now anyway. You can't even get a decent reliever for $3.5 million.
I would argue it does in the case of the New York Mets.
Yeah, well, and you think they're going to go out and get Yoenis Cespedes? Okay.
Well, it's true. I mean, they don't. It's not just the Bonilla thing. They did it with Jason Bay too. They did it with Santana. I mean, they defer money for a couple of years, and when you don't have money to spend with in the first place, having money on your books that's not going to the 25-man roster just cripples your team.
I don't think it cripples. You know, the Mets often get hung out to dry on this. They didn't invent deferring money, and they're not the only team to do it.
Right.
I think the Giants just stopped paying Barry Bonds a couple years
ago.
And
actually, the Cleveland Indians just stopped paying Burt Blyleven.
Right.
The issue for the Mets, at least why it was such a public thing, is that for a while, if you looked at their outfield, he was their highest paid outfielder. And that was sort of what the issue was there, was the fact that Bobby Bonilla, who doesn't play for the team, is making more money than any of the current outfielders that the Mets have, and they suck, which was what the problem.
Right, but I think that's a separate issue than just attacking deferring money, because from a financial standpoint and from the team, it does make financial sense.
Fair enough. Well, the Orioles have put themselves in a position to potentially compete in the AL East by getting back Davis.
I don't think that they're going to be able to. There was an article from Dan Szymborski earlier today, or it was yesterday, that he thinks that this makes the Orioles at best a fourth place team. And I don't want to put a number on how many wins that they'll get or what position that they'll finish in. But I really don't think this helps the Orioles. Obviously, it helps replace the production that they might have lost had Davis gone elsewhere, and that would have made them even worse. But that pitching staff, at least the starting rotation, I think their bullpen is still pretty good, but that starting rotation is not going to get you a playoff berth in the AL East. And I think this is another lost season for Baltimore, despite getting a guy that could hit 50 home runs back.
The AL East is always tough, and I think this year it's going to be even tougher. A lot of talent in that division.
If they do really have money, and they're being serious about, we could get Cespedes on a shorter term deal, then they should really seriously think about Yovani Gallardo, who could warrant an opt out in his own right, which would help rationalize going out and getting another pitcher. Because right now they've got Jimenez, Kevin Gausman, Miguel Gonzalez. I'm forgetting the last two.
Tillman,
but it's. Yeah, Chris Tillman, and they lost Wei-Yin Chen.
Dylan Bundy, maybe?
Is escaping me.
When is Dylan Bundy supposed to come back?
He's up.
He just lost
issues, elbow. He might wind up being one of those guys that just doesn't ever make it. He had to exit the AFL due to arm issues. That final pitcher, at least currently on the depth chart for Baltimore Orioles, is a guy named Mike Wright, WRIGHT, who finished last year with a record of 3-5 and a 6.04 ERA.
Who played for Boston? Or am I
he might
thinking
have,
of somebody else? I'll look this up. You guys keep talking. That was your cue to keep talking, guys.
Well, no, you bring up a really good point, and that is that the Orioles' pitching is going to be awful. Their bullpen looks pretty nice. Zach Britton and Darren O'Day is coming back. Brian Mattis is a good reliever. They're pretty well set in the bullpen. Brad Brock, I never heard of him, but he's fantastic looking. But that starting rotation is definitely has to do better than it did last year. I question, whether an outfield of Adam Jones and their new Korean signing, whose name escapes me, and his name was Hyun Soo Kim. And right now, their starting right fielder is LJ Hose. This is a team that definitely has a lot of holes.
To confirm, Mike Wright has always been a Baltimore Oriole, so I'm thinking of somebody else.
Fair enough.
So since we're talking about pitching, and since I'm good at segues, Mike, let's talk about Ian Kennedy.
Okay, let's talk about him.
You wrote I'm going to use the word wonderful.
Aww.
A wonderful piece today.
Buddy!
That's what I'm here for. a wonderful piece for the site today about if the Royals will regret, couldn't even speak.
Regret?
It was weird. Regret signing Ian Kennedy. I think you summed it up well in the fact that each team probably needs a guy like Ian Kennedy, or you also use Mike Leake as an example, on their team, but they don't want more than one.
Yeah, no, Kennedy is, you know, he grades out as, I mean, he's been really volatile for the last 4 years, but when he's on, he's a 3.5 to 4.5 win pitcher. When he's not, he's a 1-win pitcher, or has been. But, you know, he's capable of providing good mid-rotation production. But not really much more than that. The upside is not real high. And similar to Mike Leake. Mike Leake is somebody who is more consistent, but he's been consistently mediocre at best. You know, a 2-3 win pitcher. And, you know, it's not that these are great players. It's that they can pitch innings for you at a pretty decent level, and they're not signed to exorbitant contracts. $14 million a year for Ian Kennedy is actually a pretty good deal in the market that we're in right now, a market where Mike Leake can get, you know, 5 years and, what was it, 5 years and $80
million? 80?
Yeah, he got 80.
So, you know, it's a great market for pitchers out there. The Royals definitely needed somebody. The problem is when you do something like what the Twins have done over the last couple of seasons, and you go on a buying spree and you stack all these free agent pitchers on top of one another, and you lose a lot of the flexibility to trade guys when you need to open up a spot for somebody like Trevor May or Tyler Duffy or Jose Berrios. And both the Royals and the Cardinals have young starters who they might want to start to work into their rotation. And the contracts that they have down at the bottom of those rotations are movable. And so they've done a really good job of filling one hole, but not overcommitting themselves across the roster.
It's interesting, and I'm going to tie this into another topic that we want to talk about, that a team signed Kennedy because he had the draft pick attached to him, and teams might have been reluctant to sign him. We saw that happen with Steven Drew a couple years ago, and we, at the MLB Daily's headquarters, were wondering who was going to get Steven Drew'd, is the phrase we used, this offseason, and who was going to be the guy that would have to wait the longest in order to get their deal because they have the pick attached. I thought it was going to be Ian Kennedy. Did you guys think it was going to be Ian Kennedy? I
thought Kennedy was definitely a candidate for that, yeah.
Yeah, and it's not.
I figured if anyone was going to in this group, it would be Ian Kennedy. But after he signed, I'm pretty sure everyone's safe.
Really? You think everybody's safe?
Oh, I think Howie Kendrick is.
That was who I was going to say.
Is in trouble.
He's the guy that of who's left, I think, is the most, if we had to put a list on who would be most likely, Kendrick would be at the top just because of his age and his position. There aren't a whole lot of teams looking for a second baseman right now, but I don't know why. It's that gut feeling that baseball players hate, or at least, you know, advanced analytics guys hate. I can't see Howie Kendrick being a free agent at the outset of the 2016 season, but I've been wrong before.
Well, so he's going to be 32. He plays second base and he doesn't really play it very well. He had a bum offensive season and was hurt in 2015. You know, if Howie Kendrick can't be a league average second baseman, who's going to pony up the draft pick to sign him? Who's going to give up a first round pick for somebody who very well might be in decline? We know what happens to second basemen. They start to decline a little earlier than some of the other positions just because of the beating that their bodies take. And Kendrick is not a strong defensive player and never really has been.
So Mike, you brought up a really good point. I think it narrows down the field. A team that's going to sign Kendrick is either going to be a team in the first 10 that has their pick protected, or a team that's already lost their first-round pick because they signed somebody else. Right? I mean, no team's going to fork over a first, but a team may consider forking up a second or a third.
Right. And so, I mean, I think the Diamondbacks are a pretty...
They have Aaron Hill, like, though. It's the same player.
No.
I think Howie
Kendrick. Howie Kendrick is better than Aaron Hill. And
but are you really going to give up a pick for that?
If the Diamondbacks are serious about competing this year, they absolutely should.
Yeah, and Dave Stewart's quote saying that he didn't want to give up a second rounder after already parting with his first was one of, I mean, he said some pretty awful stuff as GM.
That's pretty laughable.
Definitely up there. If you've already parted with your first round pick, giving up your second shouldn't even be a consideration. If you can make your team better, you get rid of that second round pick.
I mean, Aaron Hill isn't even their starting second baseman anymore.
No, they have Chris Owings.
Chris Owings, and Chris Owings isn't good either. So, you know, if they're serious about competing in the NL West, and all their moves this offseason would lead you to believe they are, then yeah, they really do. They really should go after Howie Kendrick because he does represent their best chance to have a second baseman worth 2 wins or better.
I think he's going to wind up going back to Anaheim.
Interesting.
Really? You don't think?
Yeah, because, I mean, they don't really have anyone right now as an actual second baseman to start off the year. I think right now their best options are Johnny Giavitella and then Cliff Pennington.
Ooh, that's a dynamic duo.
Right, and, you know, the Angels need to win now with Trout. Obviously, you know, he's not in danger of leaving his prime, but you can't waste a guy like Trout.
Sure.
And so if they do have money to spend, you know, Dexter Fowler would be
just
nice
gonna say
for
that.
Their outfield. Right now their outfield is Daniel Nava, Mike Trout, Cole Calhoun, so I think if you weigh the needs of the Angels, second base comes up stronger than outfield.
Really? I don't think I would give up a first round pick for Howie Kendrick, especially because Giavitella and Kendrick were essentially worth about the same last year. And I would expect Giavitella to do something similar this year as well. I mean, he's not a good player, but he's not embarrassing. And but I think if the Angels were going to go out and get Cespedes, then yes, going and retrieving Kendrick from the other side of Los Angeles would make a lot of sense for them. You know, if they're in for a penny, they should be in for a pound.
It's going to be interesting. We have it's about a month away from pitchers and catchers and players reporting, but still a lot of stuff that needs to be decided before teams go into camp. Mike, you know what time it is, right?
I don't know what time it is. Tell me what time it is.
It's that time where you tell the people how they can retrieve this show.
Oh, it's that time.
That time.
Oh, well, we're wrapping up then. Well, guys, hey, if you would like to listen to future versions of this show, you can go to MLBDailyDish.com, and it's always at the bottom of each of our articles, the most recent episode. You can also go to iTunes and download it and rate us and make nice comments about the tenor of my voice and how friendly and attractive I sound. And you can also do the same thing at your, or if you have an Android phone, at your whatever Android people use to download podcasts. I'm sure we're on there as well.
That was wonderful.
Well, I do what I can.
You worked hard on that.
I did. I should one of these days research what Android has for podcasts. Yeah,
any podcasting app that you get your podcast from, we're there. As always, you can follow us all. You can follow Mike at MikeBatesSBN if you want to hear him talk about baseball or karaoke or whatever. That's the place to be. You can follow Matt at The Original Bull. He talks about everything from baseball to movies to spacey things. I think he was tweeting about space yesterday.
I just
tweeted
Kevin Spacey things?
Not Kevin Spacey things, no.
I like
that would be
Spacey
that would
things.
Be interesting if Matt only tweeted Kevin Spacey things.
I feel like I'd lose a few followers here and there.
And then you can follow me at Chris R. Schubert. I talk about baseball and wrestling most of the time, which Mike made fun of me for before the show.
Mm-hmm. And listen, I went through an entire podcast here, and I didn't even talk about how much your dad likes the Eagles.
This is true. My father on Twitter today was talking about the Eagles and was going back and forth with Mike, and Mike was making fun of me.
By the way, that's the musical group, not the Philadelphia football.
Football sucks.
Football does suck, but we're on a baseball show, so I assume people would think about the actual
Eagles. In relation to the death of Glenn Frey, and rest in peace, Glenn Frey.
All right, anything we want to add before we get out of here? No, is everybody good?
No, I'm good.
Think so.
All right, well, let's get out of here. We will see you guys next week. Hopefully we have more news to break down. So come back next week, and we will have another episode for you. See you guys.
Bye.